Hello, and welcome to Social Design Insights, the podcast that brings you the leading voices of the social design movement from the fields of architecture, engineering, planning, art, and whatever else we can find that's out there trying to make the world a better place. I'm your host, Eric Kessel, and we are at episode 99, people. I know, I couldn't believe it either. It makes me nostalgic for the halcyon days when Emiliano and I started this podcast and didn't have any idea what we were doing and tried to overcompensate by talking too much. Not sure if I've completely learned that lesson, but hey, a little exposition never killed anyone. So we've got an amazing show for you today with one of my favorite people in the world of social design and a neighbor just down the way. Krista Donaldson is going to be joining us today to continue our discussion about technology. Krista is amazing. She is the CEO of a groundbreaking organization called DRev. DRev is a nonprofit product development company headquartered here in the Bay Area. For more than a decade, they've been a leader of the whole field of social design, breaking ground and designing medical devices for the poorest of the poor. It was founded in 2007, and Donaldson took over as CEO shortly thereafter. She had previously worked for Kickstart International and IDEO, as well as the U.S. Department of State. She was one of Fast Company's Design 50, Designers Shaping the Future, as well as being a TED speaker and a PopTech Social Innovation Fellow. She has been or currently serves as a lecturer at the University of Cape Town, Kenyatta University, and Stanford University. DRev's products include the Remotion Knee, a polycentric prosthetic knee for above-the-knee amputees, and Brilliance, a phototherapy device for treating neonatal jaundice. They work all over the world, and Krista is going to help us understand how to do technology right. Let's get to the interview. Krista, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It is our 99th episode, and we're just starting off this segment on design and technology and humanity. And I wanted you on as an anchor, because for a decade, you know, DRev has for me been synonymous with this intersection between design and technology and humanity. And it's not understating it to say that DRev has really been a leader and inspiration to a lot of other firms in terms of the way that it's done. I was wondering if we could start with the origins of that. You know, you joined as CEO shortly after DRev was created. So in a way, you guys kind of came about at the same time. Can you take us back there? And you know, how did DRev start? How did you start with DRev? How did all this come to be?
Sure. And first, thank you very much for the kind words. I'm really honored to be able to talk with you. Okay, let's go back 10 years in time. A little bit of context setting. I think you probably remember too, there was real excitement around design in the social sector, and it felt like a lot of it was being driven in universities, and I would say definitely in architecture too, which was further ahead than product development. So DRev was founded in about 2008 by Paul Polak and Kurt Coleman. And Paul, as you know, and many of your listeners will know, was a really early instrumental person in what we now call the appropriate technology movement. And he had worked on treadle pumps in Bangladesh and particularly scaling them up. So he had worked with, I believe, a Norwegian technologist who designed them, and then Paul scaled them up, leveraging the market. And Kurt, just to give a little bit of background too, really visionary designer, particularly around electronics and mechanical goods. I was brought in around 2009, partly because we had a lot of really great ideas at DRev, but they weren't scaling anywhere. They would kind of like sit in the prototyping phase, a little bit of testing. So I was brought in. It was a really exciting time because I think we had 6 projects, but we also had like 3 people.
Wow.
So my first task was to pick which projects we should move forward with. And I felt very strongly about doing 1 or 2 projects really well to try and prove a model of what DRev could do and the type of impact we could have.
So what were the projects that made the cut?
Yeah, so we actually had 3 projects that made the cut. One, what is today we call Brilliance, the phototherapy device. We had a different name in the early days, which I'm happy to talk about later, the Remotion Knee. And then we also were working on a small microscope, an affordable microscope that could be used for diagnosis in low-income areas. We ended up canceling the microscope, partly because of funding, but also because I wasn't really convinced that it was fulfilling a big need. And the types of problems that we try and tackle at DRev are global in nature and global in size. And we feel like we can address them through elegant design and quality product development, but also scaling by the market. So we have to have some numbers in there to make the ability for those products to scale.
You know, it's funny. I start every class that I teach by telling my students that, you know, the only thing that I have to do is pick out one of the world's worst problems and try and solve it. And I'm surprised no one's quit yet. So, you know, it's a relief. You know, in a way, like I've always sort of seen DREV in that light, you know, as this organization that went after these huge global problems and that somehow finds a way to solve them so elegantly. And I don't want to dwell on the remotion-y and the brilliance, but selfishly, it was how I came to know DREV, is these beautiful, elegant products. If you had to sum up the design strategy at DREV that yields those kinds of results, how would you do it?
Thank you for saying that. The main thing that we look for is users asking for a solution. And it's interesting, like you think of us as having like these great successes. Like I think we've had some really great early impact in terms of scaling. But interestingly, the problems we've picked, particularly in health, are not ones that the health experts would have picked. And I think this was an early lesson for me at DREV. Because we choose problems that users articulate, I think a big lesson for me and many of my colleagues, and I think we're probably continuing to learn in the sector, is what users are asking for is not always what the experts in the field think are the highest priority. And so what ends up happening is if you focus on the ones that users are really interested in, sometimes they're kind of neglected areas. With phototherapy, it wasn't so much that it was a neglected area. There was a lot of projects already out there. And for your listeners, phototherapy is blue light to treat severely jaundiced newborns. There's a lot of projects out there because, you know, blue light is blue light. Like, let's just design an elegant lamp that has intense blue light. But I think the piece that was missing is, why is something as simple as blue light not reaching the doctors and the facilities who need it? And, you know, following, I think, what I think we'd all consider good design process, we learned it wasn't so much around the technology itself, or maybe it was. One of the big issues was that the phototherapy devices that were on the market were either really expensive, and by that I mean $3,000 to $10,000 US, so very expensive for low-income clinics. But the kicker was they used bulbs that burned out. So tube fluorescent bulbs or compact fluorescent bulbs, and those burn out like, you know, like every 3 to 6 months, depending on how much you use the device. And if you have to replace six of those every 3 to 6 months, and you're in an area where it's hard to get medical grade bulbs, and you're paying for those bulbs anywhere between like $25 and in some places like $400 or $500 per bulb, you can see how very quickly phototherapy does not become an option in those areas. So we recognize that, and with brilliance, you know, we're able to take advantage of the new advances, and particularly with blue LEDs.
So I want to expand a little bit on, you know, this idea of systems thinking behind, you know, the actual product solutions. But before we do, for the audience's benefit, can you give us a sense of what kind of scale are we talking about? You know, severe jaundice, mm-hmm. How big a problem is that in newborns?
So it turns out it's a really big problem. And I think a lesson learned for me is that the medical community was even having a hard time capturing how big a problem it is. And the physiology of it is that when babies are born, their livers aren't really fully working. So they have a naturally occurring neurotoxin that occurs in them. And as it circulates through, it can accumulate in the brain and cause brain damage or death. So it's actually pretty common. About 60% of all babies have some degree of jaundice.
Wow.
And then about 18% to 20% need to be treated. And if you have a premature baby, it's 75 to 85% of those babies need to be treated. It's really common. And in certain regions of the world, there's a genetic marker that makes you more prone to severe jaundice, and that tends to be West Africa and Southeast Asia. But it's a global problem. But what the medical community didn't understand, and this is why it wasn't always on the radar of the global health experts, is that it tends to create brain damage, but the experts don't understand fully the range of the brain damage. They understand the severe end, like cerebral palsy or deafness, but measuring things like learning disabilities or clumsiness, which is what our experts tell us, that's really hard to measure and then be able to trace back to a newborn jaundice. And the global health experts for many, many years, and this is changing now, have really focused on mortality. So, you know, babies dying as compared to morbidity, which is the brain damage. And we've pushed very hard for the global health community to think about both, because if you're a family living in poverty and you have a child who's born with brain damage, it kind of is a death sentence. And it's very hard on the rest of the family, economically, socially, in all sorts of ways. And sadly, we've heard, you know, stories from across the world about how many families will let a child like that die.
Ugh.
The good news of all of this, though, is that the global health community is now addressing morbidity issues. And so you'll see, for example, when people talk about newborn health, they'll say not just survive, but thrive. And we're really happy about that. And now, of course, they're much more interested in jaundice than when we were working on it originally.
Well, that's what makes you trailblazers, I guess.
I think it's a good reminder that you should always talk to the users to understand what their priorities are, right?
Okay, I'll buy that too. But let's talk about that, like, because, you know, I'm having trouble getting my brain around, you know, there's this problem that, you know, literally affects one in five children worldwide. And it seemed like the medical establishment was trying to solve one problem, which wasn't necessarily the problem that was driving everything. And, you know, your approach sort of looked at the problem sideways and, you know, by asking users, hey, what exactly is the problem? You started to understand a different way of design. Am I understanding that correctly?
No, you are. And I would say also the power of observation in addition to talking to folks. And some doctors would say when we were trying to dig into the problem and really understand, like, the question you're asking is how widespread a problem is it? Some doctors would be placing babies out in the sun. And so they're like, well, we sort of have a solution and I have other things I need to work on. But you can also imagine putting a premature baby out equatorial sun with its very thin skin and UV. So, yeah, it's been a real learning, I think, for us in terms of always trying to connect the dots. And I think going forward, a lesson as an organization we've learned is when we do hear things that users are really pushing for, making sure we do understand what the medical community's knowledge is and where they prioritize it, and the global health community, because those three groups aren't always in alignment.
Yeah. So DREV just passed its 10th anniversary, and you've spoken a couple of times about, you know, this process of asking users and getting informed of the next design direction, essentially. What was the biggest surprise? I mean, you've spoken about a couple of learning moments. Was there a time when you were working on a project and then went into the field and asked somebody and were like, oh, all right, well, you know, let's change direction entirely?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's so many of those stories. Oh, like, okay. even in my life before DREV.
It's time to write a book, Krista.
Maybe. Will you help me with that?
I will, and you can come on the show and promote it.
Ah, even better. How about I tell you one from DREV, and then I'll tell you one like in my pre-DREV life. You know, one thing we talk a lot about at DREV is to try and be as cognizant as possible of the assumptions you make. And I think a good one, and this one's related to the ReMotion knee, is that we, when picking our distribution model, so, you know, obviously when you talk about design of products or technology, it's not just the technology itself. You have to design the entire system around how does this solution reach the people who need it? And then how do you ensure that they actually use it, right? And it creates impact or solves a problem. With the ReMotion knee, we had some really interesting learnings around supply chain. We visited a clinic, and this was in Nairobi, who were fitting underserved populations, and they had four skilled prosthetists, and which was amazing. So we were thinking like, oh, they're going to have a high throughput. This is a really key clinic for serving this regional population. Well, it turned out when we visited that they weren't serving anyone. It wasn't because there weren't patients. The reason was because they didn't have any feet. So they had all the components for the leg system, but they didn't have the feet. So you can't fit an above knee amputee with like a leg without a foot. So it was a really good reminder of us that we have to think not just about the supply of our product and make sure that it's very reliable and it's delivered on time, that we should consider bundling them with other components that DREV may not have designed, or at least work very closely with the clinics so that where we can help solve some of these supply chain problems that would hinder someone being remobilized, that we would do that.
You're listening to Social Design Insights. We hope you've been enjoying these thoughts from Krista Donaldson of DREV around the landscape of health needs in the developing world and how engineering and technology become tools for thinking through problems differently. But we're going to take a quick break. While we're breaking, check us out on social media where you can find out more about Krista, DREV, and their work. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Social Design Insights, and on Twitter at Social Design IM. When we get back, we're going to be talking more about social innovation and the systems that support it. We're going to talk a little bit about scaling, and Krista is going to give us all some insight about what the future holds, both for DREV and the world of social innovation. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with more Social Design Insights after the break. Thank you. Welcome back to Social Design Insights with Eric Kessel. We've been speaking with Krista Donaldson of DREV about how she's brought the world's best engineering to the world's poorest communities. Coming up, we're going to drill down and talk a little bit more about the future. Let's rejoin the conversation. Krista, I want to expand a little bit on this issue of distribution. We've already touched several times on this idea of like systems and the systems around the product. And, you know, I think when people flip through magazines and they read about DREV, you know, the seduction is in the product, right? There's a sort of beautiful, yes, elegantly designed knee. And, you know, we've only been talking for a few minutes and we've already touched on it, you know, the sort of ecosystem that exists around the product. Distribution is certainly part of it. What are the other parts that you think you've gotten right? What are the parts that you think you've gotten wrong? What are the things that designers typically miss in terms of thinking about the system around the product?
Yeah, that's a great question. One of the biggest things that, you know, the longer I'm in our area of design, I feel like there are the kind of mechanical, tactical things that we need to think about, which, you know, you rightly said around delivery and distribution and scaling and making sure that, you know, if you're using the market to scale, that you're pricing things so that the margins are built in. But the longer I'm in it, I feel like there are other things like building trust that you can't just do through mechanics. I mean, yes, you can have a strategy and like try and build credibility, but what we're learning more and more, though, I think particularly when there is a social good product being pitched to like a lower income population, there's a level of distrust.
Yes, there should be.
I agree, there should be. And, you know, or even if something affordable is being pitched to someone who's, you know, who only has like a very small budget to stock their clinic. So I'm learning now that part of what we need to do is to make sure that we are behaving and attending meetings and promoting values that will help build trust. So whereas we may have talked about our philosophy more internally, you know, when I go meet with government officials or whether we're meeting with physicians groups or whoever, we try and be really upfront from the beginning, like this is our motivation, we're an NGO, so that we can start building that trust to get to the next level where we can get good feedback or, you know, have other doors open that will eventually lead to us being able to address a social issue.
So trust, distribution, marketing, fundraising, those things kind of come in?
Yeah, marketing. And I would also say we're running a project now too in Uttar Pradesh and Madhya Pradesh. It's called ECHO and it's a teletraining program. And where that came about was we were really interested in learning like, okay, doctors at block level, which is think about like community level, have access to technology like phototherapy, but it doesn't seem like they're treating low income patients. Why is that? And we found some things that, like, you know, would be expected, like patients can't pay or the patients aren't reaching the clinics. But we also found some really other interesting things. For example, like doctors didn't feel confident providing treatment because they didn't get much training in school or they weren't trained specifically for newborns. We also had some really interesting learnings around, like, doctors sometimes had low morale because they felt like the patients didn't appreciate them. And that led us to do this ECHO teletraining pilot. And the teletraining is where you have one expert, for example, we have one based at a medical college in Indore. And then via Zoom room, you have like other doctors who join in once every 2 weeks, and they might have a little lesson, like a didactic, and then they'll talk about case studies in their facilities. And it solves multiple kind of potential needs about technology adoption and usage, effective usage. One is like brings kind of specialized training to the levels where it's really needed, but it also, you know, builds trust. Like I mentioned that already, and it builds a little bit of morale and camaraderie with doctors who may be struggling with the same issues, but don't feel like they necessarily have a cohort to discuss with. I think that's another kind of example of where DREV, as we're trying to learn more about how to best build systems to solve these problems, like what we need to think about. And I also want to be really clear, like DREV isn't the one trying to do everything. We try and bring in partners like ECHO and other groups that are doing phenomenal work and piggyback with them or bring them in to run those types of programs.
So I want to get you to talk about the future a little bit. And I'm hoping you can talk both about the future of DREV as well as the future of social innovation itself. I mean, one of the reasons we wanted to do this segment is we felt like we're kind of at an inflection point. And that was the original impetus for the entire show, actually, that, you know, social design had sort of reached its teenage years. And, you know, it was kind of an interesting point for reflection and for looking forward. But Let's start a little bit with DRev. So DRev has this rich history. And again, like the products are really seductive in terms of their elegance as solutions. And I also know that you continually are developing new products and looking at new situations. What's on the drawing board for DRev? What are we going to be seeing in the next couple of years?
So you'll be seeing some new product development, but you'll also see some new strategy, which we're calling DRev 2.0. I'll tell you a little bit about the new projects we're working on. We've decided to focus on newborn health for the next few years. The reason for that, as you can probably guess, is that we've built a real network, particularly around Brilliance. And just to give you a sense of the scale of Brilliance, Brilliance is now sold in 53 countries. Wow. And we just surpassed 500,000 babies treated.
Congratulations. That is amazing.
Sometimes we can't believe it. Like, the model's working and it's having a lot of impact. So because of that scale and because of the work that went into it and, you know, kind of building the system and building the networks, we decided to take advantage of that in terms of our next project. So we're working in two areas. One is in respiratory distress. So that's when, you know, babies are born, and particularly with premature babies, they're not able to breathe on their own. A typical treatment in a hospital setting, a neonatal intensive care unit, would be a CPAP device, and that's continuous positive air pressure. And what that does is just kind of hold the baby's lungs open so that they can have that oxygen exchange with their blood so that they survive and thrive. But respiratory distress is one of the major killers, or is the major killer, of newborns in low-income areas. So we've decided to focus on that. And it's very similar to Brilliance in that we see a lot of affordable projects that are out there. But what we don't see are devices that we think meet the needs of the hospitals in our target regions. And to give you an example of that, if you were to walk into a hospital here in California, into a neonatal intensive care unit, a NICU, you would see one nurse per baby, or one nurse per two babies. And if you had more babies per nurse, you would lose your accreditation. If you walk into a public hospital in Delhi or Kisumu or anywhere across the globe, you will see in the low-income regions, you will see one nurse per six babies, one nurse per 10 babies. And in fact, I just visited a hospital in Andhra Pradesh in a major city, and they sometimes have three nurses for 70 babies in a NICU setting. So this is a real constraint. And while, you know, it's one thing to say, well, you need to hire more nurses, there's a lot of, you know, shoulds in our, sometimes in the development space, we said, okay, what can we do to improve this product, recognizing that it can't be this high human capital resource intensive product, which is what they are in Western markets, because we do have so many nurses. So DRev's approach is to make a smart CPAP. So again, very high quality, hopefully elegant design, but also meeting this need, so that recognizing that nurses can't just come over and adjust a device or tweak it and continually tweak it to ensure that the baby's healthy. So we're really excited about that project, and it is now at proof of concept stage.
That's amazing. I can't wait to see this. When is it going to go to the market?
It will probably go to the market in 2020. We're looking at starting human trials towards the end of next year.
We are going to stay posted on that. And when it debuts, please come back to the show.
Yes, I'd be more than happy to.
Krista, you had mentioned several new products that are coming online. In addition to the CPAP, the smart CPAP, what else is going on?
We're working in an interesting new area as well, newborn nutrition. This is something that again was identified by doctors in facilities in our target regions. And in fact, one doctor, and this is in Chandigarh, India, he said, you know, nutrition for newborns is the next frontier in newborn health. And what he means by that is that if you look at like the highest kind of health needs for newborns, you'll never see nutrition. What you will see is sepsis or infection. A nourished baby can fight an infection on its own. It's in the weakened state when babies will succumb to some of these things that afflict them. So we've approached it very broadly. We've looked at everything from nutrients that would be fed through an IV all the way to breast milk. We've decided to focus on lactation support and breast milk banking, and we've partnered with PATH India, and we're really looking at the gamut of how can we help babies get more breast milk. And, you know, on the lactation support side, a lot of new mothers really need help. And if they don't have someone to help them, breastfeeding can be really difficult. It can be dropped off. And as you know, we, the Western world, have a not great history of trying to promote formula to poor mothers as well. So we're looking at, if you only have so many lactation counselors, how can you scale them? So So we think there's some really elegant technological solutions there. And then we're also looking at supporting breast milk banking. And there's some, you know, more traditional hardware products in there, like breast pumps that I think all of the women in the world believe could use a bit of a redesign. And then we're looking at, for example, all the kind of components of the milk banking, like pasteurization and sterilization and testing and things like that. We think this is going to be a big project with multiple product projects in there. And we're just getting started there.
And on the strategy end, what's the next evolution?
Yeah, so evolution is the right word. We're calling it DREV 2.0. And, you know, to your point about we, the social design community, being at an inflection point, we really reflected over the last like 6 months to a year and said, you know, there's a lot of people doing amazing things. And we're in a place where a lot of the new product development that's happening is being very thoughtfully done. Designers are thinking about the business and thinking about the scaling and even thinking about impact assessment from the early days. DREV does not need to do everything, and we don't need to do all the design. What we feel like is we have a really great design method and model that integrates technological design, market design, ecosystem design, and design for impact. But let's bring in partners who have great designs too and run them through our system so that we can do more projects faster and better. Whereas like we've been kind of doing one or two projects at a time and, you know, doing them well because we feel like they require that investment to reach the scale they do. But there's so many problems and we all as a community want to be able to solve them faster. So we want to be able to do that through partnerships, either with universities or other groups, but also through acquisitions, early stage, late stage, any kind of level, and then making sure they're designed for the system. And then we also want to focus a little bit more on the delivery side. You know, there's a lot of great projects and products that could have significant impact, but, you know, the closing that link between manufacturer or producer and the people who need it isn't designed for or fully understood.
Does that make you something of a accelerator or incubator?
I suppose you could call us an accelerator incubator. What we really see it as is like more partnership model. You know, in our ideal world, we would be working together, well aligned with mission and incentives and all the things that require a good partnership. But the thing that I feel really strongly about that I think might make us a little bit different than an incubator is we do have to be really clear on what the path to impact is. And as you know, the work we all do, it's really hard.
Yeah.
We deal with complex markets. We deal with sometimes complex user structures, and anything less than like a really solid partnership and integrated team and integrated process, I think it will be really challenging to do successfully.
Well, thank you, Krista. It sounds like the next 10 years at DREV are going to be as inspiring as the last 10 years at DREV. And I feel very grateful that we were able to give the audience a little window into all of this new stuff, which I hadn't heard about until just now, but we're going to be keeping tabs on.
Thanks, Eric. I'm so happy to be able to talk to you.
Yeah, and come back to the show at any time and give us an update on all these exciting developments.
I'd love to do that. Thanks.
You've been listening to Social Design Insights with Eric Kessel. I'd like to thank my guest of the week, Krista Donaldson, for giving us her time, and to thank all the people at DREV for the amazing and inspiring work that they do. I'm glad that Krista was able to share this story. I think that there's often too little consideration paid to incremental adaptation. Sometimes design and technology and the design of technology comes in a leap, and other times the solutions we're seeking occur iteratively, step by step, guided by devoted teams of designers working hand-in-hand with those in need. To learn more about Krista, DREV, and their work, please visit our website at currystonefoundation.org. If you have any feedback on the show, ideas for guests, or just want to chat, you can always write to me at eric@socialdesigninsights.com. That's E-R-I-C at socialdesigninsights.com. Social Design Insights is produced by Baruch Seichner, and at the break, we are listening to Big Science by the ethereal Laurie Anderson off of her album, Big Science. Social Design Insights is an initiative of the Curry Stone Foundation. And hey, we're on social media, and I need more followers. I told my mom that I'm an influencer, and I don't really understand what that means, but I feel like it's important. I also feel like it's untrue. Ignorance is bliss. Anyhow, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Social Design Insights and on Twitter at Social Design IN. And we'll post daily updates of all the latest news in social impact design.